This episode is brought to you by Danone North America, the world's largest B Corp, committed to doing all kinds of better for people and the planet. Learn more at DanoneAwayFromHome.com.
This week on Meat and Three, we're spotlighting the people, dishes, and ingredients decolonizing food. We're looking at our Thanksgiving plates and beyond to explore efforts to reclaim food sovereignty in Native American culture, the African diaspora, and Puerto Rico.
I believe that oyster dressing is like the consummate side dish for an amazing fried turkey.
What we're doing there is just working the land, and we're laughing, and we're creating a space for joy. And it's in that healing occurs for us.
Tune in to Meat and Three, HRN's weekly food news roundup, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer, and it is Wednesday, December 2nd, 2020. This is the 273rd episode of this series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talent in the hospitality industry. Today, my guest is an outstanding longtime maitre d', and I will introduce him fully in a moment. First, as I do in every show, I will start out with my PR tip, and then later, we will have my speed round game, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip the show off with my PR tip of the week. So today's tip is to learn how to read people. As we know, we are all a bit different with how we think, with what we like, and our priorities. And yes, we typically think that our point of view is the right one. So it's important to recognize others' needs and preferences so we can get along better. And we can do so by noting not only what people say, but their appearance, posture, facial expressions, movement, and body language. Being observant is key to understanding one another. So let's pay attention. That's my tip today. Now, I'm excited to have my guest with me. It is Ben Checkroon. He is the general manager at Blue Point Hospitality Group in Maryland, and formerly longstanding maitre d' at Le Bernardin in New York City. Given his formative years in Casablanca and Paris, Ben may have a natural advantage when it comes to gracious hospitality and gastronomic refinements. Let's hear all about it. Welcome to the show, Ben. Hi, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining me. I'm really excited to chat with you and hear all about your career. And I'd like to start out and go back to Casablanca, which is on my must-visit list as soon as we can travel again.
Absolutely. And I'll give you plenty of tips on Casablanca, yes.
So take us back a bit to your childhood and growing up and what inspired you to get involved in the hospitality industry?
I grew up in Casablanca. I went to the French school, the French lycée. Actually, I was on the technical part of the studies, so I was meant to be studying something on the line of mechanical engineering. I left Casablanca in 1985. I went to Paris to finish my schooling, and I did do 2 years of college in mechanical engineering in Paris. I finished my high school, actually. I did my last 2 years of high school in Paris, and then I did 2 years of mechanical engineering. And after 2 years, I realized it's not what I wanted to study. And I flirted a little bit with this business in Paris. I kind of, during summer and to make extra money, I used to wait tables in restaurants. And then I came to the U.S. in 1989 to study English and for 1 year. And I was supposed to go back to Paris and go to a hotel school. One thing led to another. I did my year of English, start taking business classes, and somebody introduced me to a pretty famous chef at the time in Greenwich, Connecticut, by the name of Christian Bertrand. Christian Bertrand used to be the chef de cuisine at Lutèce under André Salzner, and then opened his restaurant in Greenwich, Connecticut, on Greenwich Avenue. And that's really where I started. And the rest is history, Sherry. Things came very natural to me. Fell in love with the industry. I always was attracted to it. And from Bertrand, I went to the Inn at Pain Ridge that Jean-Georges is running now, but back then was the Treibel family. And from the Inn at Pain Ridge, I came to Le Bernardin in 93. A friend of mine tried to get me in 92, and I refused. I didn't want to come to the city. Liked Connecticut very much at the time. And in 93, he insisted, and I joined as a waiter for a few months, then a captain for a couple of years. My predecessor left, Jacques Lemagueres, and then I took over his position and spent my last 27 years at Le Bernardin.
Wow, amazing. I mean, I can't, I mean, I've dined at Le Bernardin, and but more recently, in the past several years. What was it like back then when you started, and how did it change over the years? I mean, as you know, such a remarkable three Michelin star, four New York Times star restaurant that has such an amazing reputation. I mean, how did the restaurant change? And also, I mean, with your position, it's pretty amazing that you worked up to the maitre d' and stayed for such a long time.
Well, I believe it was more than a maitre d'. It was more of a dining room front of the house director. At the end of my career there, I was running the front of the house at Le Bernardin, and also had under my umbrella the front of the house at the wine bar and both private rooms. And one of them is privé, which is a pretty substantial private room. So the changes when I started, the team at Le Bernardin, the dining room team and the kitchen team were very lean, were very small teams. Business was very different. Then we started, for example, we did not have a sommelier when I started at Le Bernardin. There was no sommeliers. And then one thing led to another. We got one sommelier. Today there is a team of six or seven sommeliers at Le Bernardin. We had one cheese offered, which I remember used to be Roquefort. Then we went to Cheese Tray. Then we went to Cheese Cart with more than 25 cheeses on it. So there were a lot of changes, and every year things did not stagnate. We did not just sit there and wait for things to pass by. We change things. We evolve with time. We change the format of the menu. We used to have periodically a tasting menu on a flyer. Today, there were three tasting menus on the menu when I left. There was a chef menu, Le Bernardin menu, vegetarian menu. The team in the dining room is easily three times larger than the one I found when I started. So on the dining room team, when we closed at the beginning of COVID, it was more than 55 people. This is only for Le Bernardin. I'm not talking about the wine bar or privé.
Yeah, and I have to say, I mean, my experience is there, and I met you there. Last time I was dined, I was with dear Rita Jamet, our mutual friend, and we sat in the lounge area, which was super special to be in that area. And it was just such an amazing experience. And it's not, I think it's the hospitality and is a huge part of it beyond the delicious food. It's You bring you and the team just brought this amazing hospitality experience and made me feel so warm and welcome, even at a fine dining level. Sometimes restaurants like that can be perceived as being a bit stuffy or not as welcoming and in a cozy sort of way. But it was definitely special. And what happened? So what happened with COVID earlier this year, and with the restaurant and your position?
What happened is when COVID came, we closed, and we didn't know for how long. It could have been 2 weeks, 3 weeks, but ended up being a lot longer. And everybody was laid off, which is normal. And then, you know, it was also 27 years is a long time. And I start thinking about the future, and really, I did not at the time expect to leave La Bernarda. And what happened is, as many of my guests and friends and customers and peers in the industry were reaching out, and we were checking on each other and seeing how's everybody doing and if everybody is safe, few of my friend guests, I will say that, because after 27 years, they're not just customers, they're really friends. And some of them, I know their families, I know their kids. My actual boss, my current boss, used to check on me a few times. And I thought that really, I thought it was really kind of him to think of me in the midst of COVID and just check on me and check on how I was doing and my kids and I. And then the person find out that we were closed and everybody was unemployed and invited me to come up to Eastern Maryland, where he lives. And this gentleman is Paul Prager, Mr. Prager, the owner of Blue Point Hospitality. And I went up for a weekend and loved. I was speechless at what they've done in Eastern Maryland. Eastern is a very small town with a lot of history. And if I'm not mistaken, it's a town of 17,000 people. And a beautiful, charming little town in Eastern Maryland, on the Eastern Shore. And I came up, and basically here is this Blue Point Hospitality Group that opened 5, 6, 7 different businesses on the same block. And I was just really, really, really speechless. I loved what they were doing. I loved the attention to detail. I loved the luxury, the standard of the every place, from the coffee shop to the gastronomic restaurant. Everything is done at super high end. And Mr. Prager asked me to consult for him while we were closed. And he was his way of helping me. And during these rough times where everybody is unemployed, he said, "Why don't you consult for me?" And I recognized that. I recognized the gesture. I recognized the friendship. We know each other again for over 20 years. And I started consulting for him. I will go up half of the week by Wednesday, Thursday, and stay until Saturday night late and come back to Montclair where I live. One thing led to another. I enjoyed working for him very much from the beginning. He's very, very involved. I enjoyed the team. I loved the people at Blue Point. I really did. I did not meet anybody that I didn't click with. And I also thought about the potential, what's next, what's coming, interesting thing to do. And I thought about maybe it will be for me really interesting to bring what I've learned and what I've done through my career and apply it somewhere else, as far as management and service and customer service and everything else. And I decided in the middle of COVID to leave La Bernarda, which was a very tough decision to make. But I must admit that the way Blue Point welcomed me and the way the relation I established right away with my coworkers there and with Mr. Prager that I knew for a long time made the transition very easy. And I decided to move on. I decided to do that for myself and do something different and have more flexibility. And that's what I decided to do, and that's what I did. And I ended up resigning, I think, in August from La Bernarda and joined Blue Point Hospitality.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're lucky to have you. You know service and hospitality. I mean, as I was saying earlier, it's my experiences with everything at La Bernardin were always extraordinary. So it's great that you've joined Blue Point. And I was on their website and learning all about the different properties because I have not been down to this part of Maryland. So I'm due for a trip.
Sure that you'll get absolutely.
Yeah, but I was pretty amazed with all the different concepts they have because it's not just restaurants. There's different businesses. Do you want to talk a little bit about the different concepts and also what your role is with how are you more focusing on the restaurant concepts as the general manager or are you kind of a part of all of the different businesses?
So as you mentioned, there are many businesses. There is Bar Rouge, which is our high-end gastronomical European flared restaurant. Chef Harley Pitt is the executive chef for the group, but also supervises and emphasizes on Bar Rouge. The chef de cuisine is Phil. The team there, the culinary team, is young and so passionate. It is something I have not seen in a long time. There is passion coming out of when they talk about what they're doing and the enthusiasm and the excitement. It's really, really refreshing. And that's one thing that drew me also to the place is how passionate the people are about what they do. We have also a single malt scotch and champagne restaurant called The Steward. Very British. We serve small plates. It has one of the biggest single malt scotch collection in the country. It's absolutely delightful. Sunflower Greens is a little bit our, very fresh. It's the equivalent of a sweet green, but on steroids. Everything is fresh, everything is organic. We offer soups, we offer maybe sandwich or two, but a lot of salads, and you make your own. It's absolutely delicious, it's beautiful, and it does really, really well. Weather Gauge is our coffee shop. And I'll tell you again, the attention to detail in every outlet, it's just mind-boggling. And when you come up and you will see, Sherry, what I'm talking about, that's one thing that struck me when I went there the first weekend. It was wow. And again, the Weather Gauge is a coffee shop. Right now, obviously, there is no indoor service, so it's either you sit outside or you grab and go. And the attention of detail is fantastic. We serve also really high-end teas there, Marriage Frère tea, and some baked goodies that we do in-house, of course. Bonheur is our ice cream parlor with some pies, and obviously every ice cream is homemade. Bumblebee Juice is our cold-pressed juicery, and we are adding broth to it. So bone broth, beef broth, mushroom broth, that's the broth program will be launched any day now. And we have a store called the Benjamin, where we do very high-end crystal and porcelain and silver plate and china and silverware. Everything comes from Austria and Germany. And the latest one is the Wardroom. So the Wardroom, when I joined, was in construction. And I was part of the opening team when we opened it. It's a little bit of an Epicurean market that has a wine store, a beautiful cheese selection, charcuterie selection. For lunch, it's sandwiches. And at night, we turn it into a gnocchi and wine bar. We have about 24 wines by the glass dispensed with enomatic machines. So we are able to open really high-end bottles you can have from an $8 glass of wine to a $75 glass of wine or more. And that was the latest venture we opened. At the same time, we opened a bookstore called Flying Cloud. And yes, it's a bookstore. It has absolutely no food in it. We have a large children section. And it's a beautifully, beautifully done bookstore. And a pizza place is on the way and should be open before the end of the year. And more to come.
So, amazing. I mean, it's you cover basically every need that a human could want or desire, I think.
I'm telling you, I met through this summer being there, I met a lot of people visiting the Eastern Shore and the area. Yeah. And people who were maybe thinking of renting or buying, or and they stumble on a block like that. All these businesses are literally on one block. And it's a decision changing block for them, because you stumble on a block like this and you want to live close by. And it is phenomenal, the energy that Blue Point Hospitality and Mr. Prager are creating in Eastern Maryland. It's really, and the feedback from the guests is just phenomenal.
When did Blue Point initially launch their first concept? Is this all fairly new, or?
The first concept was Bar Rouge, and it was launched about 3 years ago, give and take. Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. It sounds and looks amazing. And are you commuting back and forth every week? Is that what your schedule's like now?
I spend half of my week on site in Easton, and the other half, being a single dad, I have my kids with me. So the other half, I work from home, and I'm in Montclair and the New York area. Yes. And that's for by choice, and probably will do so for the next 2 years. Once my kids are out to college, then I will definitely move to Easton.
Oh, well, I know you have amazing taste, so I trust in this concept, and I can't wait to check it out. I will definitely take you up on the offer to visit. So
yes, absolutely.
Let me ask you my question from my last guest on episode 272. I had on Clay Williams. He is a Brooklyn-based photographer specializing in food, drinks, and events, and he's the co-founder of Black Food Folks, a fellowship of Black professionals in food and drink. So he wants to know, what's it like balancing the hospitality experience for guests with safety concerns, with the idea of also taking care of your staff and keeping everybody safe? So in particular of this time of the pandemic that we're dealing with?
Well, we take safety, especially in these very special times, really seriously. And this is coming from the top of and the ownership of the company, from Mr. Prager, not only for our guests, but also for the team. And we want everybody to be safe. And there is no measures that are not taken. We take this really, really seriously. So we keep it at the, in Maryland right now, it's at 50% capacity. So we do that and even less. The space between tables and the number of people we allow in is also being monitored. And we really just do whatever it takes in the midst of the pandemic. I know, and that was before, right before I joined, I know they closed for a while. And Mr. Prager made sure that every employee was taken care of, but yet decided for safety measures to close all businesses. They had some meals to go for people that wants to do some takeout, but all businesses were closed. And again, he made a point to take care of all his employees. And that shows you that safety and of guests and of the team come before the business. Absolutely. I have seen that firsthand when I joined. And that is something that we are reminded of as the senior management, literally weekly and daily by the ownership.
Yes. So since you've been in hospitality for a long time, what is it that you love most about what you do? And what would you say are the biggest challenges?
What I love about what I do is obviously people. You can't be in hospitality if you don't like people. And people meaning co-workers, meaning guests, meaning customers. And hospitality is really, what we try to do, what I tried to do in my past job and what I'm doing now. I think getting a perfect high-end service, and you go through it, reading the guest, being there for the guest, paying attention, having the right service, having the right environment, having a safe environment, but also doing it in a humble way. You work in, most of my life I worked in high-end places, and Bar Rouge is a very high-end places, and the Steward now in Blue Point, but doesn't matter who comes to the door. We want to make everybody feel comfortable. We want everybody to enjoy their moment. Could it be somebody who eats in high-end restaurant every day or somebody who comes once a year? We want everybody to have a great time. And it is our job to train our teams to recognize that and to make people feel comfortable. And that's what I love most about the business. That's what I like to pass to the team. I mean, the technicality of the service, it's fine. You show them how to do it. You tell them why they should do it that way. And with training, they will get it. But to put into your team this type of, you go to certain places and, you hear people saying, I went there, it was kind of stuffy, arrogant. I like people to come to wherever I am and feel really comfortable and feel at ease and feel, I believe if you are comfortable wherever you're dining, if you are comfortable, if you feel good, you will enjoy your meal a lot more than if you are not comfortable. Yes, that's my true belief.
Yes, and I think you do that. I mean, as I was saying, just based on my own experiences, that's exactly what I got out of it. You made me feel extremely comfortable and happy and content, and it's special. I think you bring a specialness to service. So on that note, let's take a little break. And we'll come back, we'll play my speed round game, we'll have some industry news discussion, and I have my solo dining experience, plus the final question. So stay with us, this is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. Every time your customers eat and drink, they vote for the world they want to live in. And as the world's largest B Corp, To Know North America helps people vote for a better world with all kinds of better dairy, coffee, and plant-based products sourced and produced transparently. To Know North America has the brands people know and love, like International Delight, Oikos, Silk, So Delicious Dairy Free, Horizon Organic, and Stoke Cold Brew Coffee. But To Know North America represents more than just in-demand brands and better-for-your-business products. They bring their B Corp certification to life in ways that protect the environment and communities by utilizing 100% renewable electricity sources to produce their products at their manufacturing facilities, committing $6 million to programs that restore the soil's ability to capture and sequester carbon, helping to restore more than 7.8 billion gallons to freshwater ecosystems through their water partnerships over the past decade, and committing to 100% reusable, recyclable, and compostable packaging by 2025. Learn how you can choose better at danoneawayfromhome.com. Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer, and my guest is Ben Chekroon. He is the general manager at Blue Point Hospitality Group in Maryland, and he is formerly the longstanding maitre d' at Le Bernardin in New York City. So, Ben, it is time for my speed round game. What this is I'm going to name a couple things, and you get to pick your preference, such as chocolate or vanilla.
Sure.
Are you ready?
Yep.
All right, here we go. Eat in or eat out?
Out.
Wine, beer, cocktail, non-alcoholic beverage, or champagne?
That's a difficult one, but I will say wine and cocktails.
Okay. I was thinking also with your concepts, I should have like whiskey in there and more choice, coffee. Okay, we'll keep going. How about a tasting menu or a la carte?
Tasting menu.
Small plates or large plates?
Small plates.
Communal table or chef's counter?
Chef's counter.
Tipping or all-inclusive charge?
Tipping.
White tablecloth restaurants or bare tables?
White tablecloth.
I wasn't sure where you're going to go in that one, but you have a long history with white tablecloth. So.
Depending on the concept, both can be super elegant and super nice.
Yeah, true. How about steamed blue crabs or crab cakes?
Oh, crab cakes. That's Maryland. That's why.
I know. Well, you have a lot of choices in Maryland when it comes to crabs. So, okay, two more. Cheese plate or dessert?
Cheese plate.
Manhattan, Brooklyn, Easton, Maryland, and I'll throw in Paris or Casablanca.
You know, that's probably the toughest question because definitely New York is in my heart and I spent the longest time of my life in New York and I am a true New Yorker at heart. I must say also that really, and this might be surprising, but it should not be, I really, really fell for Eastern Maryland. The history, the people I met there. I love going back there when I go Thursday morning early. And yes, but New York is New York. And there is no city like in the world like New York. And we all know that New York will come back stronger than ever. And I know that for a fact, and nobody can say otherwise.
Yes, well, I agree. And I mean, Easton, I have to check out the city because, you've given it quite a complimentary description. And I just can't wait to see what it's all about. And it's not, how far is it as
from New York City, about 3 hours and 20 minutes, not even. It's a really a fantastic area to come out and have a long, relaxing weekend.
Yeah. And I wasn't sure on that one if maybe we haven't really talked about Paris. That, I mean, at the beginning, you started out your career there. But, I mean, Paris is one of my favorite cities as well.
I really do. I spent 4 years in Paris. I was very lucky to live in Saint-Germain and in Le Marais and only great memories. But I have this joke that I say to people when we talk about New York, when you get the New York virus, when you spend time in New York and when you discover the city and you discover the boroughs and you really discover New York City, it's really, really hard to live and to compare to anything else, at least that I've seen. I was in Japan last year in September. I lived in Paris. I grew up in Casablanca. I tell you, New York is New York City. It's when they say it's the center of the world, it really is. And yes, I love Paris, love going on vacation, love the city, love the food scene. But New York is very dear to my heart.
Oh yeah, I hear you. I've been here since 98, so so I definitely got the New York City bug myself, and love it as well. And yes, it will always survive and come back and thrive because it's New York City.
Absolutely, no doubt.
So. Okay, so for industry news, there's an article in the New York Times today that I picked out, and it's titled, What if cocktail mixers were actually good? Prefab drink mixes have long had a bad name, but here come several made with natural ingredients and a craft bartender's sensibility. And this was by Robert Simonson. So I thought it was interesting, or it was a good article to talk a little bit about, because, you know, I mean, I had Dale DeGroff on my show not that long ago, the king of cocktail. And, you know, I think things changed in the industry, in the bar industry, many years ago when people stopped using mixers because they were basically, you know, made with artificial flavors, and you know, bartenders were making everything from scratch. And so this is now a bit of a movement, like a revival of mixers, but ones with natural ingredients and that are, you know, better quality. And it seems like the pandemic has kind of fast-tracked this a little bit for people who want to be making nice cocktails at home without maybe being as labor-intensive as the work that many bartenders or craft bartenders typically do. Did you see this piece, and what's your take?
I did see the piece, actually. I did read the article. My take is, look, in times like we live in right now during the pandemic, and people not willing and not able to go out and socialize and do what they usually do, yes, probably the mixers business will thrive, and I'm sure there are people out there doing some really high-end quality mixers. But again, there is nothing, and this is my personal opinion, there is nothing like going to a bar and having your own cocktail made by a great bartender. That's a craft. That's a real craft. There's a place in Barcelona I go to on every visit. It's a speakeasy called Paradiso. I love going to employees only in the city, and to see these guys making the cocktail out of freshly squeezed juices and fresh product and natural product. I think that craft, if you really love cocktail, you will appreciate watching that. And I don't see how mixers can take that away. Not at least for me. Again, yes, today people are not going out. They want to have a cocktail at home. Sure. But when things get back to normal, again, that craft being demonstrated in front of you, when you go to the bar at the Nomad and you see these people working and how good they are at what they do, I think that's really priceless, and nothing will replace that.
Yeah.
So that's on it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I do think the craft of the cocktail and the process of it, there's something so special about it that you can't replace that with a mixer. But I do think also that this is good. This is, I mean, if there are going to be mixers, and if there's going to be products out there that are going to help people make excellent drinks, it's great that they're quality products, and that people are putting a lot of thought into these modern mixers. And I mean, there are a few people in here there I knew, like Eamon Rocky, who used to be at Bettany. He has a Rocky's liquor that he's now made and is selling, and he's, I mean, people like him who come from the fine dining and the appreciation of the craft, like I think you and I have, I think the products that they're doing, they're putting, it's like a labor of love that they're trying to make it as fabulous as they can. So
it's, I am sure, due to the pandemic and due to the demand, because they must have had a lot of demand for that, I'm sure there are some beautiful product in mixers that will emerge and that have emerged. But again, if you're a cocktail lover, if you like your cocktail, there is nothing like sitting in a bar and really having and watching somebody doing what they do best and appreciating the craft and having them do your cocktail.
Yeah, true. Well, that's that. And Before I do my solo dining experience, I just wanted to give a little shout out to David Chang, just a little industry news. Also, on ABC's Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, which aired this last Sunday, chef restaurateur David Chang of the Momofuku Empire, he was the first celebrity and chef to win $1 million on the show. All the money is going to a charity, which he selected, the Southern Smoke Foundation, which is a Texas-based charitable organization that provides crisis relief for people working in the food and beverage industry. So this was, I watched it. You could find it online now, and it's pretty exciting because he gambled. I mean, he went for it to win the whole million, and he's the first celebrity to actually win it. So it's pretty cool. If you want like a feel good moment for the industry, cause it's a charity win. You guys, Google it, and, congratulations to David Chang.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Really amazing. So, okay. For my solo dining experience, I went to a restaurant called Rosella. So here's the rundown. The location, 137 Avenue A, off of East 9th Street in the East Village, New York City. So the concept is a sushi restaurant serving sustainable seafood. The chefs and partners are Yoni Lang and Jeffrey Miller, who were former chefs at Uchiko in Austin, Texas. And the managing partner is TJ Provenzano. So why did I go? Well, I love sushi, and this was a new concept, and it's sustainable seafood, and sounded great, so I wanted to check it out. So my experience, on a recent Friday night, I made a reservation at 6 o'clock for one outside. It wasn't that cold out, which was good. And I sat outside. I got to chat with the server or manager. Her name was Shay. And we talked about the industry, and she was really warm and welcoming. And I had a really lovely experience. She had recommended a few things to the menu, and then I went with, she liked what I decided to go with, and I did too, and I had a nice time. So what did I get? Well, I decided to get the chirashi bowl, and I had a green tea. So the chirashi bowl was fabulous. It's, people don't know, it's basically you get your sashimi in a bowl on top of a bed of rice. It had roe and avocado and herbs and some fried shallots. And the fish included salmon and monkfish. And it was really fresh and super delicious and filling. So I'm glad I went with that. And the tea was served in a really lovely teapot. And it was great combo to have. The ambiance, so it's they have a minimalistic sort of deck out front, and they had some heat lamps on top. And the inside, it has a beautiful sushi bar and open-faced or window, street-lined window windows where people can actually sit, some stools facing the street. And it looked really nice inside. They were getting ready to do like a tasting menu inside for people, but the time I was there, it was just the chefs working and everyone else was outside. Perfect for sushi lovers. Interesting tidbit. So my former guest on episode 251, Anna Polonsky of Polonsky and Friends, can be credited for Rosella's design. And personal fun fact, when I was in Austin a couple years ago, I dined at the sister restaurant of Tyson Cole's, which is Uchi. The other restaurant of his is Uchiko, which the chefs had come from. So I had been to Uchi before and it was great. So I kind of knew this one would be great too. The cost was $52, not including tax and gratuity. Would I go back? Yes. And their website is rosellanyc.com. So there we go. Ben, I'm thinking like maybe your restaurant group now needs to open a sushi concept.
Surprised. There are many ideas cooking right now, and certainly the word sushi came up a few times. So we'll see. We're going to deal with the pizza place and get it open before the end of the year. But we're not stopping there. There are a lot more coming and a lot more exciting things that we are working on and thinking of.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to seeing what progresses, because it seems if all these concepts that the group has formed just in the past couple of years, I can only imagine what's to come.
So absolutely.
We will stay tuned. My next guest is Elizabeth Tilton. So we're going to do the final question where I'm going to ask you to ask her a question. So Elizabeth is the founder and CEO of Oyster Sunday, which is a corporate office for independent restaurants and food brands whose mission is to build a sustainable and supportive infrastructure for the food and beverage industry. So Ben, what would you like to ask Elizabeth?
I'm not familiar with her company. Can you tell me what she does again?
It's a new company that she founded, I believe, last year. And basically, it's support for independent restaurants and food brands with their infrastructure, with their, I think she's offering a lot of different services from consulting to, I think she's been helping many of the restaurants get through the pandemic with new business plans. And she's based, she was living in New York, but I believe she's now in New Orleans.
Well, actually, there is a question that it's funny. I was having lunch somewhere in the city yesterday, actually, at a beautiful restaurant, the Armani restaurant at the Armani store.
Nice. Oh yeah, I've been there before. It is lovely.
It is lovely, and the chef is an absolutely an amazing chef, Michele Brogioni. And we were talking about the industry, and we were both in agreement that New York will come back stronger. What I'm curious, and I'm almost certain as well, is I think it will come back stronger, but I think business will come back different as well. And I would love to, my question will be to have her input on how different and what different about the business post-pandemic. I don't think the business will be under the same form as pre-COVID. I think, yes, New York will come back, business will come back, but I think the restaurant industry will change somehow. I just can't figure out how it will change. I mean, you walk through New York today and you see all this outdoors build up that people are doing. Tomorrow the vaccine come out. I do not think that it's going to be business back as usual. I think things will be different way after the vaccine is out and efficient and working. And my question, especially since she does consulting, is what is going to be different about our business post-pandemic, at least what she thinks will be different about our business post-pandemic and after COVID?
It's a great question. I think it's a great, and it's going to be interesting to see how she answers that and to see what actually what the future does look like, because I agree with you. I think it's going to come back, but I think it is going to look different. How is it going to look different? So we'll see what Elizabeth has to say about that.
Yes, I can't wait to hear that, actually.
Yeah. Well, that's the show, and you are fabulous. Thank you so much for joining me, and I'm really excited that you have this new position in Maryland, and I wish you the best. It sounds so fabulous, so I'm really happy for you.
Thank you, Sherry, for having me on the show. It was a pleasure. It was always a pleasure hosting you at Le Bernardin, and I hope I'll have the opportunity to host you up in Eastern Maryland. And you can come and see what we do. And I would love also as a professional, get your feedback. And we take it from there.
Thank you. And I mean, as my parents can attest to, I always say on the show how much I want to go places and visit. But I'm also one of those people that does go places and visit, because I'm always intrigued and interested. And this just sounds so fabulous. And also with my travel over the past year, it's turned to more road trips and local, or easier to get to places, and Easton sounds easy enough to get to. So
yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
And thank you. So my guest today has been Ben Chekroon. He is the general manager at Blue Point Hospitality Group in Maryland, and he's formerly the longstanding maitre d' at Le Bernardin in New York City. Their website is bluepointhospitality.com, and you can follow Ben and the restaurant group on Instagram at ben.chekroon. That's ben.chekroon, and at Blue Point Hospitality. You can follow me at Sherry Bayer at Bayer PR and at All Industry. My Facebook page is All in the Industry. My websites are BayerPublicRelations.com, SherryBayer.com, and AllInTheIndustry.com. All of our shows are archived at HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We are also on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. Thanks to my engineer today, Amanda Wang, and thanks again to Ben. I'm Sherry Bayer. I will be back next week with another new show. I hope you'll tune in then. Stay safe and well, and thank you for being part of All in the Industry. All in the Industry is powered by Simplecast. I'm Sherry Bayer, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network, a member-supported podcast network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. This year, HRN is celebrating 10 years of food radio. For the past decade, we've been taking you behind the scenes of farms, restaurants, breweries, school cafeterias, and more. It's been 10 years, and we're just getting started. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.